Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Mike DeCourcy talking college hoops with Mully and Haw. The Sporting News, Big Ten Network. He's a Liverpool supporter, but we let him on the show anyway. Mike DeCourcy on 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Michael DeCourcy joins us on the St. Charles Chrysler Dodge Jeep and Ram Hotline, home of the real deal. He is Mr. College Basketball. It is his time of year. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Morning, Mike.
Morning, fellas.
So we played the Tom Izzo. We were just talking about it. I can't get too worked up, unfortunately. I understand the optics are bad. I understand it's not a game in the middle of the season, and it's a big moment and a big game. But, I've been seeing coaches yell at players. Every time I played a sport, somebody yelled at me with good reason. I don't know. If he had taken a swing at him, obviously we're having a different conversation. But he talks about accountability. We got a lot of texters saying, why should anyone from Michigan State talk about accountability? I mean, you're going to hear all that kind of thing. What was your take when you saw it, Mike, and did you think that was a big deal?
No, I mean, I'd rather he didn't, because I know Tom, and he is one of the best people in coaching, and I know how much he cares, and so I know when the world is finally watching the sport, which it is now, and only our segment of it watches during the regular season, which you wish it was larger. It's still it's significant, but it's not what you get in March. And so I knew that when I saw that it was going to get a reaction, and that it would get reaction from people who don't know. I mean, that's the problem, is that you see nonsense of comparing him to Bob Knight and things like that. Look, I know both men. He's not anything. I mean, it's not. It's so vacant to compare him to Bob Knight. I mean, they are not anywhere near each other. Do I think that it helps his image to do that? No. People say, well, look, what recruits aren't going to want to go play for him. I mean, have you looked at his rosters lately? I mean, when has he ever had trouble getting guys? Are there people that won't want to go play for him because this is the way he coaches? Yes, and they shouldn't, because this is the way he coaches. I mean, the guys that he gets, including Aaron Henry, want to play for him. And let me tell you something. Aaron Henry is going to be a fabulous player. He is going to be a big-time player. I have no doubt about that. And I think he'll respond to this. It seemed like it shook him up a little bit. He didn't play very well for a while in that game. Made a couple of big turnovers and actually kind of made it a game with some of the things he did. But then he got back, and he played really well down the stretch. The last 4 or 5 minutes, he was outstanding.
Mike, I think the one thing people like about Tom Izzo over the years is his awareness and the fact that he is pretty self-deprecating at times, and he connects on a human level, and people like that. His personality is likable for the most part. And yesterday, I think what disappointed me even more than what we saw, because I think, that if anyone who watches Tom Izzo knows that he coaches hard and he gets he holds his players accountable, and that's all part of it. And that is all part of coaches of his generation. The post game, the fact that he was so combative more than reflective about his behavior surprised me and maybe disappointed me even more than what he did on the court.
Well, Dave, he's, like I said, this is who he's been he's been head coach for almost 30 years, 25 years, whatever it is. I mean, this is who he is. And again, if he had done something that legitimately crossed the line, then I wouldn't have been able to defend that, and I wouldn't have tried. Like I said, I wish that he hadn't done that, only because I knew that there are more people watching, and the people who are watching, a lot of the people who are watching now have opinions about things they don't know, and I knew that there would be a reaction to that, and there's more media, and again, like if that, I don't know who asked the question about what happened yesterday during the press conference, but I would suspect it had been someone that he didn't know. I'm not sure, what reaction would have been good there. I mean, he basically said, look, this is, you know, this is how I believe coaching works, and it's worked for me this way for 25 years plus the time I was working under Judd, and I'm not going to change, and I'm sure he won't.
The story of the day may have been Ja Morant's performance and the way that and I know Marquette was struggling at the end of the year, and they didn't have a lot of losses, 9 losses on the season, but 5 of them came in kind of a particular stretch at the end of the year, and you thought, wow, Marquette's really struggling coming into this thing. But my God, Mike, the way that that Murray State took them apart, the way that Ja Morant controlled that game, he did it by getting everyone involved. He did it by giving up the ball, and his vision was unbelievable. They had so many little bunnies and dunks, and they missed some of those. And they had so many wide open threes, like threes that I could have missed. It was just astounding to see the way that guy distributed the ball.
You know, it's funny, Mike. I was thinking about this. The best thing that ever happened to Marquette was Ja Morant, because
yes.
Because all anybody's talking about is how great he was, and he was great. Triple double, 16 assists. He was phenomenal. But Marquette got their butts kicked on every level. I mean, he, as I wrote on SportingNews.com today, it wasn't just Ja. I mean, you don't get 16 assists unless everybody else getting it done too. You don't have your star player go 9 of 27 unless Shaq Buchanan is able to play him basically without help, which he did, and made him shoot basically 3-33. Everything that Murray State did, I mean, even down to their big guys, Murray State's big guys, dominated the inside. Two of Marquette's starters didn't even score, not a single point. So they would be getting harangued by people talking about how they collapsed down the stretch, how they went meekly out of this tournament, if it weren't for the fact that Ja was so brilliant and people got excited about that. And honestly, I'd rather people talk about those things, because, you know, it's the better side of college basketball is that, you know, this tremendous young player who has great potential and has people excited about his game. It's an awesome story, and it's great to see.
Minnesota gets a big win over Louisville. Charles Matthews has his best game in probably a month for Michigan. Michigan State holds off Bradley. The Big Ten goes 5-0. Maryland survives and advances over Belmont. That's a big day for the conference, Mike. Who is the first team today to lose from the Big Ten? Or could it be 8-0 after today?
Well, I think all three teams today are capable of winning. The Cincinnati-Iowa game is the first game of the day, and Cincinnati is certainly capable of beating Iowa. That'll be an interesting game, because the difference between Cincinnati and Iowa is that Cincinnati is 100% aware of who they are, and they are that most days. I mean, they've played 35 games, and they've probably been that team 31 of them. Iowa has been a different team about half the time, sometimes good, sometimes bad. And they've won games when they've been bad. That's the difference between them and Cincinnati, is that Iowa, like the Northwestern game being an example, I mean, they played 38 terrible minutes and then 2 great ones and won the game. And that's been something that's happened. They did it at home against Indiana, terrible for about 38 minutes, made enough shots to tie the game, played well in overtime. And so I can't say whether or not Cincinnati will stop them, because this is not the Cincinnati team. They're terrific in, like I said, knowing who they are, knowing what they need to be to win, but they're not the defensive team that they've been in the past. They've been much, much better. They're not as physically overpowering at most positions as they were in the past, except for the one occupied by Jaron Cumberland. Cumberland needs to have a big day for them to stay alive, and I don't know whether that'll happen. He certainly was good on Sunday. We'll see if he continues it. Of the three teams that play today, the weakest of the three is Ohio State, but Caleb Wesson being back makes a difference, and he might be able to get them through this.
Michael, what surprised you yesterday? Was there anything? I mean, we didn't see the massive upset, but did anything surprise you? And what are you anticipating today? What will be the game that you want to keep your closest eye on?
Well, I will tell you what surprised me was New Mexico State is down 2 points, and they have a player, I believe his name was A.J. Harris, gets down the left side of the lane. He has a clear step on the defender. Like, the guy is behind him. You don't get that often in college basketball, right, in a half-court situation. And he has the lefty layup to tie the game, and he throws the ball out behind the three-point line to try to get a guy open to win the game. I just, like, that would never have happened 10 years ago. And, you know, look, I think Steph Curry's great and all that, and I don't have a problem with the way the game's changed, you know, do the math and all that. But do the math. It's 2 points and you're in overtime. The other team's lost two regulars to fouls. You've got to make the layup. I mean, that was one of the most ridiculous decisions I've seen a player make in basketball, to pass up a wide open layup. Now, am I going to say it's impossible to get the shot would be blocked and then he'd been disappointed both ways? Maybe if the guy behind him is Dennis Rodman, yeah. But he was going to make a layup, tie the game, and go to overtime, and he thought the better of that. That's not good basketball. I mean, you take the layup. So that, and then of course they wound up being fortunate in that the guy he threw the ball to got fouled as he shot the three and missed. But then they missed the free throws.
But then he missed the free throws.
Yeah.
And then they come back with a chance to get the ball going to the rim. And look, if you watched John Morant yesterday, one of the shots he made was a spin move. We see it all the time. You spin middle and throw the ball by the rim, and then you're laying it in or dunking it. We saw that with Ja. And instead of doing that, they run a play to get a guy a wide open three. They're down a point. They don't need three. You know, get something going to the rim. You might get a foul. You might get a layup. You might get something easy. And instead, they get the ball to the guy in the corner for a wide open three, and he's in such a rush to shoot the shot. And he didn't have to be, because he had a second and a quarter or so, and he doesn't even hit the rim. That's just not basketball the way it ought to be played. And again, I don't have any problem with three happy basketball if you can shoot, because I understand that, you know, a three is better than a two. And if you have a team of Golden State Warriors or people like that, terrific. But those decisions were poor decisions for people who've watched the game for a long time. You got to pay attention to the math of the game. You know, there at the end, you always hear analysts say, you know, at the end of games, you don't need a three, you don't need a three. I'm always the one screaming, yes, you do, because you're down five, and if you make a three, or you're down four, and if you make a three, they can't take you out of the game without, you know, they can succeed and still can't take you out of the game. I'm a believer in that. But you don't take threes when you don't need to take threes.
What about today? What's the big game?
As I said, I'm really, you know, you were asking about the Cincinnati, or asking about the Big Ten, and I am looking forward to that Cincinnati-Iowa game. One of these things that's interesting, I lived in Cincinnati for 18 years. And people are squawking about the fact that Cincinnati fans only have to drive 90 minutes to go to Columbus. And obviously, the way across the country for Iowa, or halfway across the country for Iowa. And if the Bearcats happen to win, it's a long way for Tennessee, which is the number two seed. I lived in Cincinnati for 18 years. I'll be surprised if Cincinnati fans, just because it's 90 minutes, all of a sudden take over Value City Arena. I don't think that will happen. They'll have a nice crowd, nice representative crowd, but I don't think they're going to own that arena the way a Kentucky fan would if they were anywhere near it.
Great stuff. Thanks so much,
Thanks, Mike.
Great
talk to you Monday.
Buddy.
All right, fellas. See you on Monday.
Yep.
That is Mike DeCourcy, TSN Mike, the place to find him in sporting news, obviously.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.